Call the case.
Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Larkin, Judge Werke, Judge Ross, Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding. First case is A21-1152, Suzanne Krupp Appellant versus Super Value Incorporated, doing business as Cub Foods and Cub Foods Respondents.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It's 23rd day of March, 2022. We're glad to have you here. We're hearing our oral arguments on the Zoom platform this morning. They are being recorded, and because they are recorded and available afterwards only in an audio and not video format, we would like each of the attorneys to be sure to state his or her name immediately before each leg of your argument so the record is clear who is speaking. Each side will have 15 minutes for primary argument. Appellant's counsel will have 5 minutes for rebuttal time if you choose to use it. With that, we're ready to hear from counsel for appellant. Please introduce yourself for the record and begin your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. Lee Hutton, H-U-T-T-O-N. May it please the court, Judge Larkin, Judge Werke, and Judge Ross. This case, in my opinion, is a very simple case and should be presented to the jury under the law. The issues that we believe are right for a jury to hear, or whether or not it was reasonably did Cub Foods have knowledge of the fact of this dangerous floor, also whether or not it was open and obvious. The issues that I would like the court to really focus on, because I think this is the crutch of the case, is whether or not the policy that warns employees about wearing slip-resistant shoes is knowledge of this dangerous propensity or this dangerous floor. Now, yes.
Can I jump in and interrupt you for just a moment? Because there's something in your brief that I thought was very significant and could perhaps argue strongly in support of your position that there's a disputed issue of fact. But you cited to, you didn't cite to the record of evidence, you cited to the complaint, I think, and that was on page 2 of your brief, where you say, defendant sold loose pistachios near the entry of the store. What is the evidence in the record to support that claim?
Your Honor, that evidence comes from, and that evidence is not disputed. That was testified by my client in her deposition, and also the store, because what we're dealing with, Your Honor, is the produce section.
Okay, so can you cite, you know, there is a requirement in our rules that you cite to the place in the record that supports the proposition of fact. Now, you cite it to the addendum number 2, I believe that's page 2, at paragraph 10, you're actually citing to the complaint. Can you tell us where in the record there is evidence, that is evidence that would be admissible in court, not the complaint, that would support that proposition?
Your Honor, what supports that proposition, and I don't have the full deposition transcript, but that was testified by Ms. Krupp, that was the location of the pistachios in the produce section.
No, I understand that she found the pistachios on the floor. I think that's on the record. What I don't see is defendant sold loose pistachios near the entry of the store. Is it your position that that was her testimony? And if so, why wouldn't you cite it in the brief?
Yes, Your Honor, that was her testimony. I will admit that we probably didn't think it was as important because we're talking about the produce section. And the produce section is identified in the policy as being one of these slippery floors.
And that's so a different issue, and I'd like to get to that, I'm sure. But sure. I believe the testimony, the evidence that was cited by Cub Food or Super Value is that the store did not sell bulk pistachios, does not sell loose pistachios. And so that's the evidence I've seen in the record. And of course, it's not our role on appeal to go looking around for support. So I wanted to give you an opportunity, since it's not in your brief, to actually identify it now that we're in oral argument.
Yes, Your Honor. I very clearly it's identified in the testimony of Ms. Crump in her deposition. But also, Your Honor, there is pictures and defendants.
We won't belabor the point because you've got to get to the rest of your argument. But maybe during the time when you're waiting for your rebuttal, you could find that in the record and quote it for us.
Yes, Your Honor. And I'll just leave you with this to your question. There is statements in the record, both by Krupp and SuperValu, that they later found a loose pistachio on the floor, and they took a picture of it.
I don't think that's disputed, that she stepped on a pistachio. But I think what is in dispute is your claim that the defendant sold loose pistachios. And it goes to whether or not they would know of this hazard other than the policy that you're citing.
Yes, Your Honor. Let's talk about the policy. The policy acknowledges that they warned employees. And so the theoretical question is, why would SuperValu have the obligation to warn employees to wear slip-resistant shoes?
Mr. Hutton, you acknowledge that the employees are not warned to watch out for pistachios or that type of thing. The employees are warned about the condition of the floor. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, yes, but if you go back to the policy does discuss this need to ensure that the floor is always clean, that materials in these particular areas, including the produce, causes the floor to actually be more of a dangerous. And I can point to the policy, which I think is number 5, where they talk about the wet, greasy floors, and it increases the potential of slip and fall accidents.
That is the policy. But you're not alleging that she slipped on a wet, greasy floor. You're alleging that they sold both pistachios. Pistachios were on the floor and she slipped on one of those. So I'm having a hard time. I mean, if you were saying the floor was wet and she slipped and here's this policy that warns of wet floors, there'd be a connection. But it seems to me that there's a disconnect between the sole basis for the fall that you've asserted and the policy on which you're relying to show knowledge of the harm. Could you address that disconnect?
Your Honor, and I think that's a very good question, because when we served the complaint, at the time, my client only knew that that there was a pistachio and that she had fallen. When we went through discovery, we got this policy. And the policy talks about the produce section being inherently slippery. To the point where employees must wear slip-resistant footwear. And so what we argued...
I don't think the policy says the floor is inherently slippery. I think it's indicating that the floor could be slippery when it's wet or when it's greasy. Is there anything you found in the policy that would suggest a hazard that the floor is slippery in other circumstances than wet and greasy? Like, for example, nuts?
Your Honor, if you look at the policy, slip, trip, and fall accidents is the title. Right before where it says wet and greasy floors pose a serious hazard, it said never leave debris or equipment on the cells where keep areas well-organized and free of clutter, clean as you go. Then it talks about the wet, greasy floors. As a policy as a whole, Your Honor, it talks about cleaning, maintaining floors, ensuring that this is free from these type of debris because of the opportunity of an individual going through this produce section where this was to actually have been slippery.
But if we accept that, which is a reasonable argument, you would then need to show that Cub had some knowledge that these loose pistachios were on the floor. I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing any evidence that they were present for a significant period of time and Cub knew. As Judge Ross had suggested, it's a much better argument to say, well, they're selling bulk cashews, so it's reasonable to expect some might be spilled on the floor as people place them into bags or containers. But we don't have evidence in the record to show that there were bulk cashews in that area.
Your Honor.
Unless you can point us to your client's testimony to that effect on rebuttal.
And Your Honor, I think you're exactly right, because you stated two terms. Number one, that we would present that this goes to the jury, is number one, reasonableness. Obviously, reasonableness and the weight of credibility is one for the jury to decide. With regard to knowledge, outside of me taking the time to find that particular entry, in my client's deposition, disputing that material fact or creating a fact dispute, you do have this policy which gives super value the knowledge. Even the court talked about this general knowledge. We're even suggesting and prepared to argue that it was specific knowledge that the produce section in particular, they identified out of the entire store certain departments that are particularly on the consciousness of super value.
Just to be clear, again, that's regarding floors that are wet and greasy, right? Am I correct that that's the policy connection that you're making again?
I don't think so, Your Honor. And with all due respect, the sentence says wet and greasy floors pose a serious hazard and increase the potential of slip and fall accidents. And maybe this is heuristic on language.
No, right. You were identifying the produce area. And I just wanted to make sure I understood what you were referring to in the policy. As I read the policy, the produce area was identified as an area where the employee should be specifically more generally concerned about wet and greasy floors. Am I correct about that?
I would respectfully disagree, but I understand the confusion in reading that. As I read it, there's a title, wet and greasy floors pose a serious hazard. Then they talk about slip-resistant footwear. Then in the bullet points, it says, if you work in the meat, seafood, deli, bakery, produce, or floral departments, you're required to wear these company-approved slip-resistant footwear. It's not clear as whether or not the wet and greasy floors, which pose a serious hazard, is the specific reason why they chose these particular departments, but they chose these departments.
Doesn't the context suggest that? I thought maybe I misread the policy, but as I read the policy, it's general concern, wet and slippery or wet and greasy floors, specifically in these areas, wear shoes because of wet and slippery floors. That seems like maybe you can quote the language that bridges a different connection that I'm not seeing.
Sure, Your Honor. No, I agree with you. And I think where my hesitancy or maybe confusion is that it does mention wet and greasy floors pose a serious hazard, but it doesn't say that the floor must be wet and greasy for it to be slippery. I'm suggesting that the policy says if it's wet and greasy, it poses a serious hazard, and I'm quoting, and increases the potential of slip and fall accidents. And then they're saying that because these are the areas where I can argue that in the produce section, particularly, things are more likely to fall on the floor versus...
I'm going to change the track a little bit because we've discussed this quite a bit. Can we talk about open and obvious danger? And I realize that this is the summary judgment grounds that was raised by respondent on behalf of Cub Foods. But our court gets criticized frequently if we go ahead and issue opinions that address matters that were not heard by the trial court. I didn't see that Judge Wall addressed this issue as to whether it was an open or obvious, or am I missing that? Can we address that? Are we permitted to do that as an appellate court?
Yes, I do believe that you're permitted. In general, I do think the court addressed the open and obvious in a section where he talked about the knowledge requirement. And I agree with you that the court didn't really address the open and obvious, but there were statements that that Krupp did not present enough evidence to go to the jury. And we believe, and I do believe, that the court can at least address this, because it was brought up in the motions prepared by the parties in the court with regard to this open and obvious. And the open and obvious issue, especially in our argument, was that there's no way for Krupp to have known that slip-resistant shoes in the produce area would have prevented or protected her from slip and fall. And that's something that any patron would want to know if they're in a hurry in the produce section.
Would you agree, based upon the way we approach the procedure of appeals, that the only way we can get to the open and obvious question is if we agree with you that the hazard was known or reasonably should have been known? And then the way we get to the open and obvious would be to remand for the district court to decide the issue and not us decide the question. Would you agree that that would be the proper approach?
I do, Your Honor. Yes, I do. I have 22 seconds, and I will rest now and address the rest in rebuttal.
Excellent. We'll then hear from counsel for respondent. Please introduce yourself for the record before beginning.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jessica Richardson on behalf of respondent. May it please the court. This is not a case about flooring, but about pistachios. The district court very succinctly and correctly noted that its analysis begins and ends with whether Cub Foods had notice of the pistachios that allegedly caused appellant's fall. I will point out, we've cited to the record to Ms. Krupp's deposition, page 24, beginning with line 12. Did you see any either bags of pistachios or bulk loose pistachios in the area where you fell? Answer, I don't recall. That is the only evidence in Ms. Krupp's testimony with regard to whether there were bulk pistachios in the area. To the contrary, we have deposition testimony from assistant store manager Rachel Grabeau, I believe, who testified in her deposition at page 32, lines 18 and 19, that the Cub food store where this incident occurred did not carry bulk pistachios.
So your view is that on the undisputed evidence, there were no loose pistachios near the entry of the store being sold?
Correct. The allegation, as Your Honor pointed out, the cite in plaintiff's brief is only to the allegation in the complaint. I see two other facts with regard to pistachios that have been cited in plaintiff's brief. One being that plaintiff alleges that she slipped on a pistachio, and two, that the employees found the pistachios on the floor after the appellant slipped. I believe those are the undisputed facts. With the allegation in the complaint and the testimony and what's being argued that plaintiff slipped on a pistachio, the issue was whether the pistachios that were found on the floor after the fact had provided Cub Foods with either actual or constructive notice. And there is simply no evidence anywhere in the record with regard to an undisputed fact as to notice of the pistachios.
Let me just to clarify this, if Mr. Hutton identifies for us in the record support for the notion that there were bulk pistachios being sold, do you concede that there's a disputed issue of material fact with regard to knowledge, or do you believe that's still a matter for summary judgment?
I believe it's still appropriate for summary judgment in this case, but that, as you pointed out, to the extent that we're reviewing the undisputed facts in this case, I don't think that's even an undisputed fact. If it were a disputed fact as to whether bulk pistachios were sold alone, I don't believe that the mere fact that bulk pistachios are sold in the store would in and of itself create constructive knowledge of pistachios on the ground sufficient to give Cub Foods create a duty for Cub Foods in this case. I think that the cases that we've cited in our brief, this is like a puddle of pistachios. We've cited a number of cases that talk about puddles of water and what would constitute constructive notice or actual notice. And in this case, the mere fact that bulk pistachios are sold somewhere in the store may be akin to the issues of where we've got case law where the court has addressed whether it's snowing or wet outside. The mere fact that that condition might exist nearby alone does not provide constructive notice, much less actual notice, of the condition inside the store at this particular time.
But wouldn't you then, if there were evidence that there were bulk sales in the area where she fell, wouldn't that give rise to a genuine issue of material fact, whether Cub had a duty to warn based on, you know, the reasonable possibility that these things could end up on the floor and someone could slip?
I think the duty would be created if they had constructive notice that there are pistachios on the floor. The fact that they're sold alone, we don't have any other, there's no testimony, no, for example, that there are frequently pistachios found on the floor or that the bulk, I believe the testimony from the assistant manager is that there are bulk peanuts sold in the store. That alone hasn't created a fact that there are often peanuts on the floor or any other evidence that the district court had to consider in deciding the summary judgment motion in this case. They decided on the facts presented that there were, not only were there no bulk pistachios in the area, but that there was not sufficient to support a finding of constructive knowledge in this case.
I'm going to offer a different line here of thought, one that I'm sure Mr. Hutton won't appreciate, but what if there was knowledge that there are pistachios on the floor? I mean, it seems to me different if this were a case of banana peels on the floor. Is there anything in the record that would suggest that a reasonable employee at Cub Foods or custodian of the property would believe that pistachios on the floor create a likelihood or a significant risk of falling? I guess I've never heard of someone falling on a nut before. This case tells us it could happen, but I'm just curious what SuperValu's position would be if it turns out that we think that there's a disputed issue of fact as to whether there were bulk items or whether there were pistachios.
Well, again, and I would say this goes back to, as you know, as the court has pointed out, what is before the court to consider is the record that has been made in this particular case. There are absolutely no facts on the record that would suggest pistachios are known to be slippery or have caused problems or have even been found on the floor in these areas. I understand that appellant has pointed out that there's a general instruction to employees to keep the floors clean. I think that's reasonable. I don't think that alone.
Well, he's arguing more than that. He's arguing that Cub has this policy that you have to have slip-resistant shoes to protect its employees. And why doesn't that put SuperValu on notice of a general hazard that requires more specific monitoring and impose potential liability in this case?
Well, I believe you find that in the record that we've cited to of, again, the deposition of Ms. Grabeau speaks to this. The facts, the undisputed facts that are in the record in this case is that store associates work in different environments than where the customers are shopping in. And the reason, as has been discussed with respondent, the reason for the store policy is to address wet and greasy floors, and that the, for example, as we've cited, customers shop outside the deli, customers are not behind the deli. Same goes for all of the environments that the store associates work in that customers simply aren't exposed to. That is the reason for having that policy for the employees as opposed to a general policy for any customer who comes into the store. In this case, the lower court has correctly concluded that the appellant hasn't not produced any evidence of respondent's actual or constructive knowledge of the specific condition that she's alleging. What she has alleged is that she slipped on a pistachio, and there's simply no evidence in the record with regard to constructive or actual knowledge of pistachios, regardless of any policy that that Cub Foods may have to reasonably keep its employees as safe as possible. With regard to the open and obvious argument, it was raised on summary judgment, and we are in agreement that it was not, the lower court did not reach that issue of open and obvious because the case was dismissed on the knowledge grounds that we've just been discussing, and that remand to the lower court for that decision would be the only appropriate action if the court determines that summary judgment.
Are you saying then, Ms. Richardson, this kind of goes back to my question of Mr. Hutton. So you're saying that this court can't look at that issue in and of itself if Judge Wall did not make findings on it? The open and obvious.
Well, I think it would be appropriate if the summary judgment order was reversed on the knowledge issue.
That Only if,
then it be remanded for, we would still have, Cub Foods should still have an opportunity for the open and obvious issue to be reviewed by the district court.
Isn't there case law that indicates the Court of Appeals can affirm a trial court on any grounds? And that's my question about criticism when the Court of Appeals touches on an issue that was not necessarily addressed. Is that possible for the Court of Appeals to address an issue, affirm a district court on a separate ground?
I believe it's possible. I don't have a legal site for that.
I think the case law supports the proposition that if an issue was presented to the district court and it can be decided as a matter of law on appeal, a remand might not be necessary.
Does it sound like I'm trying to defend the Court of Appeals from criticism when individuals don't necessarily recognize we can affirm a district court on any grounds? So that's the bone I'm throwing you, Ms. Richardson.
Then I agree.
Don't miss the softball. It was a slow pitch.
Like I said, I'm not prepared to cite back to you, but it sounds like you have that one in hand. So with that, I'll rest.
Thank you. We're ready for your rebuttal argument, Mr. Hutton.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Ross, I do have to say, I looked through the deposition and I can't find any affirmation that there was bulk or loose. I will make that representation to you when I look through it.
In your defense, it looks like somebody else wrote the brief, but
yes, yes. Let's go back to the policy because there was one question that I think was important to note, that this is not a policy that is for just employees. If you look at the policy in particular, it generally talks about how to make this store environment safe for the customers. This is how you give great customer service. So they're not just talking to the employees about their own particular safety. They're also instructing the employees how to prevent such accidents just like this. And while there was a mention with regard to the deposition of the deli department, where people have to go behind the counter, again, this was not a deli situation. This was the typical produce section that is in the store when you walk in, that is available for everybody to see. There's no behind the counter type avenues or venues for anybody to go.
It seems like, if I'm not misunderstanding your argument, correct me if I am, it seems like the logical conclusion of your argument would be that after the store initiated this particular policy, there would be liability anytime someone trips on any item anywhere in the store, regardless of whether the store had knowledge of the item being on the floor. Am I correct that that's the import of your argument?
You're absolutely correct. And I wish we had policy.
Is there any case law that would support that approach, that if a store has a policy advising its employees to be careful that there might be hazards, that because of that policy, even if the store is not aware that a hazard has developed, the store either knows or reasonably should know that a hazard exists or it's developed without any knowledge of it?
Your Honor, I can't cite to a specific case law, but however, there are cases in Minnesota and throughout the jurisdiction with regard to premise liability. For example, if there is a big hole and we have to put a fence up so kids or other individuals can't do it, despite the fact that it's open and obvious, there can be, and let's just call it strict liability.
Well, that's where you know of the hole. In my hypothetical, the store doesn't know of the hazard. So what you've recognized that there's no case law that supports that proposition. What would be the logic? What would be the tort theory, the logic of imposing that type of liability, essentially strict liability?
Well, Your Honor, for example, if there is one of those doors that you walk over and open up the floor, the store certainly could have just put a warning sign up or a rug underneath the produce section. And I think this is where the rubber meets the road.
In my hypothetical, I asked you anywhere in the store. So you're suggesting that the only way to avoid liability is to have a store that has carpet throughout the entire store?
No, Your Honor, I'm not suggesting that, but we're only regulated to the departments that were in the policy. And what I am saying is that the store, knowing that these floors are particularly slippery, they warn for shoes, a simple sign that is permanent to say, hey, just be careful walking on these particular floors because X, Y, and Z. Because there's no way for a consumer to know that these floors are hazardous or could be hazardous for any other reasons.
I know I'm the one that brought up duty to warn. Did you argue that or plead that theory, failure to warn?
No, Your Honor, because we still haven't even gotten to that hump.
I have to press you as Judge Ross has. I mean, under your theory, as I understand it, if given this policy, if someone is in the produce department and drops some wet lettuce on the floor, and seconds later, someone slips on that, even though it's undisputed, no one from Cub saw the item fall on the floor and knew to pick it up, there'd be liability just because it was a policy.
Your Honor, because it goes back to reasonableness.
So then Cub Food has to have somebody in the produce department guarding at all times against any item falling on the floor. That seems inconsistent with case law saying there has to be actual knowledge, and the way you prove actual knowledge is to show that the item was visible and it was there for some period of time. So I'm just having a hard time reconciling your theory with what the case law provides, which isn't strict liability.
I don't believe, Your Honor, with all due respect, I do think that a store, Cub, or anybody could put just a rug, a 6-foot rug or a 3-foot rug, in the most areas. Because if you're looking at a grape or whatever that is arguably loose that falls on the floor, which SuperValue does contemplate, it's not going to fall and roll 20 feet. But they have to take reasonable precautions to do that. Many times when we go into grocery stores, you do see a rug underneath the produce section for that reason.
Counsel, I believe your time is up. We appreciate the arguments, and you'll have our decision within 90 days. As